And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Matt Sorum, and while probably best known for his time with Guns N' Roses, it makes sense to start this way.
You know, all of us on the show are so darn sorry, and sincerely sorry, that this is the third and thus our last current show with the Beatles, because these youngsters from Liverpool, England, and their conduct over here, not only as fine professional singers, but as a group of fine youngsters, will leave an imprint with everyone over here who's met them. And that goes for all of us on our show.
Again, thank you for the time on this. So let's just go into it this way, please. We're going to be talking about the event coming up at the Palm Springs Plaza Theater. This is a huge event, really for a wonderfully worthy cause. But first, let's go to some of your past. And curiously, I think I'll be spending the least amount of time on the biggest name. I mean, Guns N' Roses and the Cult, I have very little with them. But I mean, I've spoken with so many by now who were influenced to pick up a six string, okay, when they saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan in 1964. You wanted to be a drummer after seeing Ringo on Ed Sullivan, but you were maybe only four at this point, I think?
I was just coming up on 5 years old. You know, it was Sunday TV, family day, right? So young enough to point at the TV and show my mom that I was interested in being a drummer. I mean, at that young of an age, I mean, I have a 4.5-year-old daughter now. So, you know, she's getting into artists she likes. You know, she watches Lady Gaga and, you know, all that stuff. And I'm trying to turn her on to, like, David Bowie. And
okay.
So she gets it. I'm like, I'm kind of think back, and I go, well, that's kind of the age I was. But I pointed at the TV, and the next Christmas I got a drum under the tree, started banging on that thing, and then that was pretty much it. I just kept that spark from the Beatles looking like cartoon characters, really. You think about their imagery in those days, you know, the haircuts and everything. It kind of really looked like cartoon characters. So, you know, especially Ringo bopping around back there. And to this day, it's been the reason I started. And I always say that was the pivotal moment for me to get that spark of interest.
Wow.
And it stayed with me. And I just kept on it ever since, through elementary school and then into high school. I had 3 band classes. And then I started my first band. I had a band in elementary school. We played the talent show. We were called Liquid Earth.
Oh,
and we did like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, My House.
Oh, excellent. Wow, nice.
Yeah. I mean, that was the 70s, you know. It was like the early 70s. Let me see. Elementary school. Yeah, late 60s, early 70s. So Our House.
Yeah.
And then in junior high school, I started a band called Prophecy. And then I was the youngest guy in that band. A couple guys from high school, me, because I'd already kind of been banging around on the drum kit. And then through high school, I played all, like, the parties, you know. I would play all the, you know, kegger parties that people would throw, and we had the best band in town. And around 14, 15 years old, I started heading up to Hollywood, because we were about 60 miles south of L.A. in Orange County. And the two older guys in the band, they were a couple years older than me. One of them had a car, and we started playing on the Sunset Strip. You know, Gazzari's, Crazy Horse West, they used to have a...
Wow.
Amateur night, and then I'd play. There was a great club called the Starwood, which was on Santa Monica Boulevard. So in the 70s, I was already playing there when I was like 15 years old. You know, in those days, it just didn't seem like anyone cared about carding anybody. I mean, I was hanging out in the Rainbow Bar and Grill when I was 17 years old. No one asked me for an ID.
Wow.
And yeah, I was running around on the strip, and my mom thought I was over at my friend's house, you know, or something. But we didn't have cell phones.
Yeah, that's true.
They couldn't get a hold of us, you know. I think my bandmates would tell their mom the same thing, you know. They were over at my, you know, somebody doing something, and I don't know, man. We got away with a lot in those days because no one could find us, basically. But we always made it home somehow. Remember when we'd have enough money to put enough money together to get gas in the car. That's all we needed. That and enough, you know, something to eat and go to the Taco Bell or something. But that was pretty much it. And then when I got to Hollywood, that was the thing. I just could not deny the energy that I felt there as a young guy. And, you know, of course, girls and rock and roll. And
oh, yeah.
I remember seeing my first big rock star walk by. It was Roger Taylor from Queen.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I got to be 17 at the time. And he got out of a Rolls Royce. He just looked cool. And Queen was massive in those days. And, you know, and I remember seeing him thinking, man, I want to be that guy. And he had two girls with him, not just one. He had a couple girls. And I just was like, that was it. I was done. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to Hollywood in 1978.
Okay, perfect.
As soon as I finished, I packed up my bags and headed out. My high school band didn't want to go with me. My band Prophecy, they all had jobs and girlfriends. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going. If you're not going, I'm going. If we're going to make it at all, we got to go to Hollywood. So I left them behind. It was probably the best move I ever made because otherwise I would have been stuck in my old town. And I just felt like I had to go. It just was calling me, you know. It had a sound. It resonated with me, you know, and the energy. So I headed there and I huffed it for about 10 years before I got the big break.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Matt Sorum. Beyond Guns N' Roses, The Cult, and much more, there's so many bands we could be speaking of, but really it's the path to even being in a band and not feeling like it's going to happen overnight.
I didn't give up, and I always say to people, you know, young musicians ask me, I think young musicians are much more like waiting for something to happen a lot quicker these days. I think you're going to put something on YouTube and be a star.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you really got to want it and you got to be able to be patient because it's going to take time and just don't give up. And then if you really believe in yourself, you can do it. And that's really where I was at, you know. And my mom would always say, when are you going to get a real job? You know, I'm like, well, this, you know. This is my job. You know, this is what I do, Mom. I don't have any other skills. I'm skilled at this. I can do this.
Nice.
You know, as parents are, they worry.
Oh,
you know?
Sure, sure. I mean, I was a theater geek, so yeah.
So I finally, you know, I started doing sessions. I got into studio work. I played with everyone from Gladys Knight and the Pips to Belinda Carlisle to Sean Cassidy to King Solomon Burke. I cut my teeth in my early 20s. Toured the South with Greg Wright, who went on to be Michael Jackson's guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
I was 19 when I did that. So
wow.
My sort of like paying your dues kind of stuff, it was all really, you know, I say to people, it's all part of the process. You know, it's like, oh, I haven't made it. Well, you haven't made it, but you're in the process of getting there. So once I did those sessions, I started getting in with these big name people. I knew I had the talent. I just had to find the right vehicle. And I had two things that kind of fell by the wayside. I got a record deal on Motown with Greg Wright. And in the old days, you'd make a record. And if they didn't want to put it out, they did the thing that they call shelve the record. They would rather not put it out than spend the money marketing it. So we got shelved at Motown. And then I joined another band. Well, it was actually an artist named Jeff Paris. And we were on PolyGram. And same thing happened there. The record kind of came and went. And then after that, I just decided I was going to jump into a touring unit. And that's when I joined The Cult. I got in The Cult in 88. I was about 28 years old. And I said this in an interview recently. I felt old. I felt like I was getting to the expiration date. If I didn't hurry up, I was going to almost be 30. If you were 30 in rock and roll, you were an old guy.
Yeah. So I was that's right.
I was like, I better get a gig quick. And then I did. Once I got The Cold, I was off and running. You know, then Guns N' Roses came soon thereafter.
Sure, sure.
The rest is kind of history, but yeah.
Well, while you were still in high school, you mentioned this, since KVCR covers not only San Bernardino and Riverside counties, but it goes into L.A. and Orange counties. This would, I think, interest people in this area, with you being actually from this region, Orange County anyway. And with your playing drums, starting in the jazz band and the marching band, I saw somewhere that amongst your influences, beyond the heavies in the world of rock, you cited at some point Ginger Baker and, what really caught my eye, of course, Buddy Rich. So did you have an interest in jazz, or was it just something that developed maybe through playing it in high school, or that was really the only vehicle that you had for drumming? They don't have a rock band in high school usually.
Well, we had a jazz band.
Yeah.
And it was run by a guy named Terry Newman. He was actually a jazz saxophone player and ended up being a teacher. We had three things that you could pick. You know, you could take wood shop, you know, you could take metal shop. You could pick these not academics, but they were called extracurricular. But basically, I picked three music classes out of those three options I had. You know, you had math, science, all the regular academic stuff. And then you were able to do three chosen particular things. So I chose marching band, wind ensemble, and jazz band. And the jazz band was cool because this guy, Terry Newman, he was real hip. You know, it was the 70s. There was this other kid that played really great jazz. He could play brushes, and he had like a lighter touch than me, and I was into like Black Sabbath and like Deep Purple. But I also gravitated towards like Maynard Ferguson. There was charts of like Chameleon and Maynard's version and the horn section. And I'm like, I could play that. I mean, that's got, you know, a pocket, had a bit of a funk groove. Wasn't jazz necessarily. It was like big band kind of. So that particular upbringing, and what my teacher saw from me, Terry Newman, when I was about 17, right before I got kicked out in continuation high school for not being a very good academic student, they moved me into a continuation high school. I got in trouble a few times too, but got caught smoking pot, stuff like that. But he pulled me aside and he said, Matt, I've been teaching 15, 20 years now. And of all the students I've ever taught, I think that you have the goods to go the distance. And I said, oh, that was a huge influence on me because I had pushback from my parents. They weren't super supportive. My parents got divorced when I was young, around six, but my mom was a music teacher, coincidentally. My grandfather was a professor of music. So they just didn't understand that I wanted to go in a professional career of being a musician and how was I going to make a living, you know?
Oh, gosh.
So I basically got that inspiration from my band teacher. He gave me such confidence that I sent him many platinum records. He's been, I thanked him on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was the one guy. And, you know, we'll fast forward to Adopt the Arts in a minute, but I think that's a big pivotal moment for me to inspire kids today because it just takes one person that believes in you and gives you that confidence to be able to go the distance. Ten more mountains, take it slow, and things will be just fine. You and I just use a little patience. Ten sugar, take the time, cause the lights are shining bright. You and I got what it takes to make it.
And that was part of the reasoning behind Adopt the Arts, empowering elementary education through music. More at adoptthearts.org. And more as KVC Arts continues. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, NPR One, or many other podcast sites. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Thank you so much for supporting KVCR, whether it's a one-time gift or setting up a sustaining membership of $5, $10, or $15 or $20 a month. Either way you contribute, it only takes close to 3 minutes of your time. Give day or night at kvcrnews.org/support. In this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses, as well as The Cult before and after Guns N' Roses. We're actually hearing now, though, about his high school band director and the world of jazz, and something I never would have expected, but was so pleased to hear of.
Something that really drove me, you know. You know, years later, I got a call to play with the Buddy Rich Orchestra from Kathy Rich.
Oh, wow.
The only kid of Buddy Rich. Buddy only had one daughter, Kathy. Kathy, to this day, runs the legacy and the trust of Buddy. So Kathy started putting on these Buddy Rich tribute concerts and started creating Buddy Rich tribute records with Atlantic. So I got called by Neil Peart and her. Mm. Neil Peart was producing.
Oh, wow, okay.
And, you know, Neil had a real interest in going back and studying. He studied with Buddy's teacher, and I'm spacing out on his name right now. But Neil went back and studied with this guy and got really into the jazz thing. But basically, Kathy called me, and, you know, I was probably fairly nervous about the opportunity about playing with the big band and going to New York. And, you know, everyone from Steve Gadd was on it to Omar Hakim to, you know, Max Roach at the time. And, yeah, like all these amazing drummers from the jazz world, from the more the fusion world.
Lenny White.
You know, got all those guys, you know. So I chose a track that I felt I could bite off, which was something he did in the early 60s called Boola Witch. Mm-hmm. And you can go on YouTube and watch it, me playing live at the big band at Power Station.
Oh, wow.
And it came out on the album. But what I learned about that was staying in my lane. You know, I think as a drummer, I cut my teeth in rock and roll. I could play a lot of different styles, but I can't really say I could ever tackle jazz drumming, because jazz drumming, I think, is a touch thing. It's a lighter feel. It's beautiful music, and I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get into a lot of jazz fusion in high school. I got into, like, Billy Cobham and Lenny White.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Weather Report. I had a run-in with Jaco Pastorius.
Oh, cool.
So I knew a lot of those guys, but they were always like, man, you're a great rock drummer. You're a great rock drummer. So, and I would say this to musicians, you know. I would be like, you know, what do you do well? You know, what is your gift? I mean, so when I played Boola Witch with the big band, I went in the studio and they looked at me like I was from outer space, you know, this like rock and roll dude all tattooed up. And Kathy said, Matt chose Boola Witch. And I went in there and Neil, like, I sat down and I played it and we got it in the first take. That's the take that you hear on the album is the first time I played it.
Oh.
And I don't know what came over me. And I said this, I saw Kathy Rich last week and I said it to her. I said, Kathy, I don't know what happened. And I wasn't reading a chart or anything. I played it completely by ear.
Oh.
And I remember Dave Weckl came up to me and he was holding all his charts. And he said, Matt, you've been woodshedding on this and reading your charts? I said, I said, you know, I can read and stuff, but I prefer to feel the music. I just like to listen. I'm not Rain Man, but I'm the kind of guy
gotcha.
That's been able to get gigs because I'm a quick steady.
Okay.
And I think that's what bands like about me is I can walk in and I can listen to the stuff and play it a couple of times and I got it. You know, if I rehearse it by myself or sometimes I don't even have to do that. But and I went in there and I swear to God, I swear, and I said this to Kathy, I said, I felt possessed by your dad, like he was in the room or something.
Wow.
Not that I could ever play remotely close to Buddy Rich. I'm not saying that at all.
Okay.
I'm just saying I was able to nail that track, and that's what people have always said, man, I had no idea that you could play like that. I said, well, that's because I've been in Guns N' Roses, the Cult, and I played straight up rock and roll meat and potatoes, right? But I've always said I played for the song. I would say I'd probably come more from a Ringo school than a Buddy school. It's like if you listen to Ringo, you wouldn't be like, oh, my God, he's the most amazing drummer. You don't think of it that way, but I do.
Right.
Because, and I say this to a lot of people, Phil Rudd from AC/DC, that's not doing much, but what he's doing is perfect for the song. It's perfect for the band.
Right.
So I was always like, I'm just going to play what's right for the song and what's right for the band. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I got where I've gotten in my career based on it's never really always been about me as the drummer.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a collaborative effort, and it's more about supporting the music and the band and the singer. And the reason I play with Steven Tyler now, the reason I play with Guns N' Roses, Velvet Revolver, all the artists I've played with, they know I'm not going to be out back there showing off, doing too much stuff and being all about me, you know?
Good.
Ringo stays out of the way, plays what's right for the song. So I put myself closer in that category than, but Buddy Rich, when I played that stuff, man, I was just like, wow, this is, the horns, playing with horns is so powerful. And I was just like, wow, this is heavier than rock, because the horns are just heavy. You know what I mean? Like, they were in front of me. If you watch the video on YouTube, they were set up in front of me just blasting. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, out of these interesting twists and turns in my career, then I always take opportunities that are, like, challenging to keep myself on my toes. I think when you're in a band your whole life, and I've come across this with artists from big groups, take them out of the big group. Sometimes they can't play as well with other music. It's harder for them to do other stuff. Because
right.
they've been in the same band for so long. I'm not saying they get lazy, but they're just playing their stuff all the time.
Sure.
My career's been jumping into different things all the time, and that's good for the soul, I think.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Matt Sorum for this edition of KBC Arts. I really only had one question earlier about the cult, and I'm even going to bypass that because I kind of found the answer, and that was how you even ended up with them. But just 2 hours ago, I saw a YouTube headline, and I didn't watch the video, but I saw a headline talking about your, to quote, funny audition for the cult. Do you mind telling us about this, please?
You know, I was kind of word of mouth in Hollywood that, you know, when you get an audition, if you can even get in the door, I mean, it's funny because now I play with Billy Idol occasionally. And
yeah.
We do parties and privates and stuff. And I remember when I tried to get in an audition for him, I couldn't even get in because no one knew who I was. And, you know, it's like they were getting drummers through word of mouth or through management. And I told Billy later, you know, I tried to get in to join your band and now I play with him. And he's like, oh, my God, I love playing with you. And I'm like, so long story short, a few people recommended me for the audition, and luckily I got in. And I learned, I woodshedded every record they ever made, and I say this to young artists, you know, be prepared. Don't walk in unprepared, ever. You're not walking in to rehearse. You're not walking in to learn the songs. You're running in to run the songs, not to learn them. When you go to a rehearsal, you're ready before you get there, not when you get there. So I was ready for whatever they threw at me. And then what I realized was the singer wasn't there, Ian Astbury. So I auditioned with the band only. And then I had to basically wait to find out what was going to happen for 2 weeks.
Oh, gosh.
And I felt like I got it, and the guitar player and the bass player, Billy Duffy and Jamie Stewart, at the time, original bassist, they were like, man, this is great, sounds great. You know, and now we can just wait for Ian, what Ian says. And I was very superstitious, because I used to say things before they happened, and they wouldn't come to fruition. I would say, oh, yeah, I think I got it, or I got it. So I couldn't say anything for 2 weeks. Everyone
right.
kept asking me, did you get the gig? Did you get it? I'm like, I don't know. Haven't heard. Don't know. And then Ian came in. And I remember in those days, I mean, the cult was polar opposite to the Hollywood Sunset Strip kind of hair metal thing. You know, it's like they were a British band. Everyone dressed in black. It had a bit of a gothic feel to it.
Yeah.
Ian came in wearing like a big hat with like a skull on it. Glass sunglasses and looked like a Native American version of Jim Morrison. And
with hair 4 feet long.
Yeah. And we kicked into a couple of songs and he sang, didn't even say hello to me. It was very kind of dry, you know, British. And then he turned around to me and he said, well, you know, mate, you've got the gig, but quit smiling so much. Because I used to be like the jovial guy on the drum kit, you know? I'm having fun. Why can't I smile? Coming from California and everything, you know? Hey, how you doing? All right, right.
Yeah. Okay.
And initially, that really stuck with me from then on. I played my persona on stage as this sort of more aggressive kind of drummer, you know, even with Guns N' Roses. I stopped smiling. I just never smiled again. And, you know, we never smiled in photos. We were always tough. It was always a tough thing.
Yeah, yeah.
A rock and roll band. It was in this, you know, imagery, you know. I remember when Sammy Hagar asked me to join, and I said, you guys smile in all your photos, man. You're too happy. it's like, I don't know if I'm the right fit, you know? even though I do smile in real life quite a bit because I'm a happy guy. But, you know, so it's funny. I got the gig and I went on the tour all over the world with those guys. If it wasn't for that, I don't think I would have gotten Guns N' Roses. So I owe them a lot for that break and getting in that band. I had two runs with the Cult, a couple big tours with them. Came back, I got back together with them after Guns N' Roses, after I left that band.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's Matt Sorum, and just barely touching on the biggest bands he's been with, but rather focusing more on music education, recognizing what you've gotten and what you have the capacity to pass on. And that led to Adopt the Arts, empowering elementary education through music. Adopt the Arts has a huge event March 2nd at the Palm Springs Plaza Theater, honoring Paul Rodgers and Geezer Butler with an all-star lineup of musicians. More on the next KVC Arts. Also more at adoptthearts.org. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Matt Sorum, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Adam Rainey Ruiz, Jessica Greenwell, and Shireen Awad. Many past shows can be found through Spotify, iTunes, NPR One, or many other podcast sites, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. Give any time, day or night, at kvcrnews.org/support. And again, thank you so much.